Good afternoon, fellow Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting live once again from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley. You know, I'm going to stop there for a second. There are a lot of people out there that were getting upset about the capital of Free Washington. It is the capital of Free Washington. The city council is doing a phenomenal job expanding freedom, reducing the size of government, not going to tax increases when they have a problem. Capital Free Washington. It's the biggest city over here. And it is really the conservative example to everybody on the west side of the state. They have a balanced budget, no debt, massive reserves, doing everything right. And they're looking at reducing the bureaucracy on small business owners, property owners. Seems like capital of Free Washington to me. And if you agree that it is the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, if you could message me at Facebook/Patriot Radio US, because I want to see how many people are paying attention out there. Message me at Patriot Radio US on Facebook and let me know that you agree. And after all, I mean, this is in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news. And that is the news. It really is kind of news is not covered by any. There is a conservative constitutional revolution going on here in this part of the country. And that is something that we should be proud of, and it's something that we should be talking about, I think, even more openly. But always, you know, I always start the show by saying we always have to keep our focus on Jesus Christ, because that's where our hope is, not in man. But we can't just sit there and pray. We need to get out and we need to make things happen. And especially with the upcoming elections, but more importantly, just with local issues that are going on, we've got to start showing up. There are literally leaders, politicians out there, elected officials who count on you not paying attention. Who, in fact, build it into their messaging that you're going to forget something's going on after 3 days and that it's not that big a deal, and then they just keep doing what they're doing. Or they'll say one thing on the campaign trail, and then when you're not looking, what they'll do is they'll go vote a different way because it's the politically expedient thing to do. Maybe it gives them a political favor or something. And it's because we're not paying attention that this stuff's happening. And I want to speak directly to the church right now, actually. You know, as Christians, the temple of the Holy Spirit is the body of the believer. The government of the United States is we the people. And the genius of the founders was it was supposed to be the body of the believer. It was literally supposed to be the motto, no king but King Jesus, meant that we showed up as believers and got involved in the political process and allowed the Holy Spirit to work through us. That was the whole point. And yeah, it's hard. Everybody's busy. You probably are listening to this, maybe driving from work, or maybe some of you driving in to work or finishing work. And it's really hard on all of us to add one more thing to the plate. But folks, I got to tell you something. Being involved in the process of government, that's actually our duty, because we the people are the government. We have to be involved. And if we aren't involved, eventually politics will have that interest in us. And it might be too late at that point to leave our kids and our grandkids with that kind of future that we want for them. One of freedom and not of slavery. One of choices and not of being pigeonholed in what would become a third world country. Literally, no jobs. Only a little work, and that work is horribly difficult. I don't think we want that for them. So that's why we get involved. And I got to say this to the church, because it's our fault for not showing up. We're the largest voting bloc in America that doesn't vote. We're the largest voting bloc in America who's registered to vote and doesn't vote. were the largest voting bloc in America who isn't registered to vote. It falls on us. And there's a old saying that your government is a reflection of the people, and I think it's true. And we need to do as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, and that is stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is, and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. An ancient path is difficult, but it leaves freedom. And now from the front, your daily intelligence briefing on the international front, as we've been talking about, Russia putting nuclear-capable Iskander missiles into Syria, then a simulated attack in the Baltic on a U.S. warship, and then another one where they pass within 50 feet of the warship. Clearly attempts at provocation and clearly attempts to send a message to the U.S. government that they're not afraid. I look at those kind of things, and they're getting more and more frequent and closer together. Eventually, something's going to set off the powder keg. Something will. Also, on the international front, 2,000 migrants a day into Sicily, and now German and Italian intelligence officials are saying, hey, there's terror attacks planned for this summer at European resorts. Well, it's terrible to say I told you so, but we told you so. You're letting in these folks that are intentionally coming to destroy Europe. And the New American Magazine's got a great article on it right now about these planned attacks at European resorts. I don't know what else to say on that. I mean, we got to do something about it and stop this political correctness and just knock it off and say, look, here's a threat. It's very clear. It's demonstrable. They're saying that that's what they're going to do, and they're doing what they said they're going to do. So I'm taking them at their word, the ISIS sympathizers and the Al-Qaeda sympathizers that are out there. I'm taking them at their word that they're going to do what they said they're going to do, and there's going to be an attack. Now, the question is, do we let more people die because of this just horrid political correctness that's completely out of control? So I don't know. And I know they're naming credible sources, but the fact of the matter is, I mean, this is just the same story again and again and again, where these people are allowed unfettered access, these refugees that are some of them coming intentionally as part of an orchestrated and organized infiltration, a hijra. They're coming intentionally to do this stuff. It shouldn't surprise us. We should just accept that as a fact, just like it was 200 years ago at the founding of the country. They had to deal with the same thing, where they had Islamic terrorists attacking U.S. shipping at that time. Same part of the world. We just need to accept that that's a fact, and we just need to deal with it. And yes, there are some refugees that are coming over that are good. In fact, one of them that I know personally that came here helped the United States Army. But he was well vetted, as was his family, before he came. And that's just not happening, and they're admitting it's not happening. How could you vet 2,000 migrants a day into Sicily? That's impossible. It's becoming the new Ellis Island, Sicily. So, anyway, I see that happening, and then I see on top of that the next thing on the international front, and that's all the economic rumblings. The oil surplus is running out, so oil prices are going to rise back up. Gold and silver looks like it's trending upward. Alan Greenspan has even said that the monetary policy of the Federal Reserves, and he's implying not just the Federal Reserve here in the U.S., but around the world, have hit a wall. Deutsche Bank admits rigging the gold prices as well. And George Soros, of course, has to weigh in and says that the European Union is in mortal danger. So it's no surprise amidst all of this stuff, the Panama Papers come out. They're leaked from this Panamanian law firm, Mossack Fonseca. And there's been several cases of political fallout from this already. The Icelandic PM resigns. Other people are under scrutiny. But the fact of the matter is right now that people are guilty until proven innocent. And so privacy rights have to go. That's where understand that that's where the messaging for this stuff is going to head. And it already is here for many of you that have dealt with a government bureaucrat anywhere in the United States or in Washington. You are guilty until proven innocent. And the Panama Papers just simply show that no matter what laws are out there, that the elites are going to ignore them, do what they're going to do, and yet use those types of things as an excuse to take away your privacy rights. Because now it's going to be, well, this could happen with any American. Really, well, most Americans aren't shuffling hundreds of millions of dollars around offshore. But they're going to use this. Mark my words, there's a great article in the New American Magazine about this. They are going to use this as an excuse to take away your privacy rights. Watch. And last on the international front, look at all the earthquakes that are going on. Just as a side note, Ecuador, Japan, Alaska. I don't know. Seems like things are really really spiraling. It's just, it's incredible. And that's why I keep mentioning we got to keep our hope in Jesus Christ. On the national front, once again, Hillary Clinton's still not in jail. So we're not even, we're going to keep talking about it, but I don't even need to say much more. She should be in jail. She's not. Clearly violated the law of something that was truly impactful, sending through an unclassified server classified information, some of it so classified they had to vet the people investigating her and give them new security clearances. Also on the national front, the Sixth Circus, I'm sorry, did I say circuit? Circuit Court of Appeals says that warrantless collection of cell phone locations is okay. So folks, that little personal tracking device that most of us have, it's okay for them to warrantlessly collect your location. And apparently, what are they going to do with that? Build profiles on you, perhaps, like they are with license plate readers? But not to be outdone, federal researchers are building a massive database of genomic data. Okay, let's not use a complicated word. They're building a DNA database, but of course it's for your protection and your safety. There's no problem here. We're just looking to use this for research purposes so we can understand better patients involved in heart, lung, blood, and sleep research studies. What could go wrong? Also on the national front, Microsoft is suing over gag orders in regards to, well, what? Warrantless collection of your data? Because they were gagged. And that's why people are losing faith in the system right now, because you have these federal judges who are literally gagging people, both literally and figuratively. They are preventing the truth from coming out intentionally. I know Microsoft's got to sue over it. Well, most of us don't have that kind of money to sue. So you end up like Shauna Cox, who was involved in what went on down in Oregon, completely muzzled from telling the truth. But yet trust us with all the warrantless collection that we're doing. Just trust us, right? Why would they have to do all these gag orders if they were above board? If they were above board, it shouldn't be any issue. Just be transparent about what they're doing. If they were abiding by the Constitution, they would have nothing to hide. And you know what? That's what they always say to us. Well, if you have nothing to hide, no. Government, if you have nothing to hide, then you should release it to the people. Let the truth get out. And then again, this IRS chief encouraging the theft of Social Security numbers for illegals. And then, like, the next day or the day after, a judge rules that the IRS is, quote, untrustworthy in the Tea Party cases where the IRS was using their ability to audit for political reasons. Unbelievable. I mean, but there's more, as it were, for the infomercial. A border agent was probed by the Department of Homeland Security after testifying before Congress on the problem at the southern border. And I got to agree, this was out, I think it was on Drudge today. It was Sheriff Charles Jenkins from, I think it's Frederick County back in Maryland. He said, every county is going to become a border county. And again, I ask the question, what could go wrong? Well, what could go wrong is that we have no laws and no border and no sovereignty anymore as a country. That's what could go wrong. And that, my friends, is an enormous problem. I mean, think about some of this stuff. Because if they can track warrantlessly your GPS location data, okay, they can use agencies of the government like they did in the Tea Party to audit people and ruin their lives. They can advocate stealing Social Security numbers for illegal immigrants. And then they want to use a gigantic database for DNA. Think about what that power could be. People could use it to frame people. They could use it to create facts that don't or didn't exist. You know, and I'm using facts in quote. They could manufacture crises with this kind of stuff. They could send people to prison. Because again, you're guilty until proven innocent under the bureaucratic state right now. I mean, folks, this is serious stuff. And it's constant every day. It gets worse and worse and worse. And the bottom line is I told somebody a long time ago, we need to make sure that we reduce the size of government by 50% so that we can get rid of the bureaucrats who are clearly unaccountable and return power back to the people. On the regional front, well, today is Patriots Day, and I just want to put it out there for all of you to pray for the Patriots that are in jail right now, some of whom are truly political prisoners in our time, especially in the wake of what happened with Lavoie Finicum down in Oregon. So please pray for them today on Patriots Day. And if you don't know what Patriots Day is, just start page Concord and Lexington. And you can find out about Sam Adams and John Hancock and what the final line in the sand was for Patriots during the Revolutionary War. And there's a hint here. It involved gun confiscation. Lastly, on the local front, it's the campaign season once again. And if you have an opportunity, again, join a campaign, help folks out locally, even if it's putting up just a couple signs or something, or maybe doorbell on one weekend, just do your part and help. And get some good constitutional conservatives elected and reelected so we can continue to expand freedom here in this part of the United States of America. And folks, it's working. The rest of the country looks up here and the, how are you guys doing this? We are literally on the leading edge of expanding freedom. So please join that movement to make sure it happens. And maybe think about running for office yourself because we need good people. And there are so many local elected offices. It is incredible. There's, I think, 52 in the 4th District alone, city council, school districts, water, sewer districts. I mean, it runs the gamut. Get involved. Get involved and be the freedom-expanding elected official that you want to see in office. Become that person. Be that person. And also, I would be remiss if I didn't remind you about my fundraiser on April 28th up at Tretzi Farm Winery. We're going to have another great time up there, and you can Sign up online, $25 a person, and we're going to have some great speakers up there, and just always a good time of fellowship. So look forward to seeing you all there, April 28th, up at Tretze Farm Winery, 6:30. And that's a briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for the show. And again, go to Facebook.com/Patriot Radio US and message me about the question that I asked at the beginning of the show. And I'm not going to tell you if you missed it. I want to see how many people are paying attention. Well, it is, and speaking of somebody that's paying attention, it is my great pleasure to introduce John Trudell as an author of Raven's Run and a couple of other great books, talking about what's going on in the world today before it actually happens. And I know it's probably gotten a little creepy for you, John, because there's a couple of things that you kind of predicted would happen, and they kind of were eerily similar. So thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today, my friend.
Thank you so much, Matt. I am honored to be back, and very happy to be on your show. What can I tell you? Where do you want to start?
Well, where do you want to start? I mean, there's so much happening in the world. I guess you know, the first thing, let's start with kind of things going on back at home. I've been mentioning a lot of what's going on with the bureaucratic state back here at home, and I'd just like to kind of get your take on this just massive expansion of government that's taking away a lot of people's freedoms. Kind of get your take on that part of it, and then we can move to the Middle East, which I know is a favorite topic of yours.
Yeah, let's get, I'll say local. I am safely tucked into Arizona, speaking from there, but Lord help us all, I have to go back to the People's Republic of Oregon in about 2 or 3 days. And in fact, I'm going up your way. I'm going to an author's conference in Washington. But right now I'm in Arizona. But the events that have been happening as far as government overreach and tyranny have kind of preempted everything. It's the Burns incident, I think, is just now reaching national awareness. But it is scary in 2 or 3 different dimensions, and it happened right there in Oregon while we were in the state. I was watching it unfold. I was trying to finish my book. My wife was recovering from surgery, and so I was kind of housebound. The weather was terrible. And in the middle of the night, I have a lot of sources out because I track conspiracies, I track jihad. And over the years with my novels, which have been doing, you know, getting a lot of notice, I get sources, and people just drop in and send me things. And here is a radio interview with the only witness that is free to tell what happened in Burns, and it's a young girl who was the only one who got out of the target car, clinic and struck, alive, and they let her go after a few hours. They didn't charge her with anything. She was barely 18. She just turned 18, and she was terrified. She was very shaken, and she went into hiding. But kind of on the way, she gave one media interview, and that got sent to me. And I'm going, what in the world is going on out there? I've still got it up on my blog, blog.johntrudell.com, and I have a one of the more popular posts. One of the more recent one is called "The Burns: Who to Bless, Who to Blame." But it is an incredible story, and I was in the state watching it unfold and collecting inputs from people as they were told, and it's still unfolding. I'm down here in Arizona, and Finnegan, the guy who was shot, comes from Arizona, so they're very interested down here, and it's been kind of preempting my book signings. But yeah, that's what's been happening locally, and it is government overreach in some very unusual, even scary directions. We can talk about that more, but definitely a lot is happening.
Well, I would like to talk about that a little bit more. I mean, there are some really kind of frightening things going on. I mean, all under the umbrella of, you know, guilty until proven innocent. I mean, that's really what's happening with a lot of these things. You know, whether we're talking warrantless seizures or we're talking about labeling a particular group of people terrorists just because of what they believe, even though they clearly are not. Many of them are veterans. And then using these terrorism laws, and some laws dating all the way back to the Civil War, as an excuse to imprison Americans, again, for what they believe, for, quote, committing a conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States, end quote. I mean, those are some very frightening things. If you could weigh in on that.
I will. The first thing is, we're almost like living in an Orwellian time. People talk about my novels reflecting reality. Well, increasingly, people talk about what's allegedly reality in the media and the papers is fiction. Okay, incredibly. And so you have these sagas like in Burns, where it starts off as, you know, the word, when it first hit the media, they were calling it an occupation of the refuge in Burns, in the wildlife reserve. Well, the truth is, it is a wildlife bird-watching kind of place. It's abandoned in the wintertime. And what had happened, how all this got started, was 15 years ago, there was, and if you already know this or have talked to your listeners about it, cut me off, but it started with some ranchers who were in the Hammonds, who lived in Burns. They were very prominent, they had a ranch, they were, you know, outstanding citizens. And 15 years ago plus, there were some wildfires, which is not that uncommon the way forests are managed. A little bit of lightning, and here goes a wildfire. And the best practice of the day back then, the common practice, and also the best practice, it's what BLM was doing, is if a wildfire started, you would set a backfire to protect your property. And so that's what they did years and years and years ago. And the grandpa, Hammond, sent one of his grandkids out, young kid, set a backfire to protect our ranch and contain this. Well, the fire got out of control. Okay, and those are the facts. And years pass, and the government, you know, expands, you know, new rules come in and everything else. And they keep harassing the Hammonds about this fire years and years and years ago. And finally, they are charged with a whole bunch of federal charges. And they get a reasonable judge, and it's the grandpa and the kid. And all this happened a couple years ago, so this is not new news. And so they go before this judge, and the judge dismisses all the charges except for two. And it was two counts of setting a fire, which they'd already admitted to. They said, yeah, we set a backfire to protect our ranch, okay? And so they charged him with arson. And the judge says, well, I have no choice. All the other charges are dismissed, but I have no choice but to convict you on this. You've already pled guilty. And so he gives them a minimum sentence, but there's a provision that they can't appeal this after they get out. This will end it. You've been suffering this federal scrutiny now for over a decade. This will end it, and you'll have to do some jail time. And they give up, and they say, sure. So grandpa and grandson go to jail. Well, okay, they serve their time. They are released. And whereupon the Obama administration has taken power, they come in, and they say, no, no, no. And they invoke a terrorism law that was passed in post 9/11, way back when, and it carries a very stiff minimum sentence. So they say this federal judge has screwed up. He had no right to give them a light sentence, even though they had no intent of harming anybody. And so they have to do like a 10-year sentence, okay? And that ripples around the ranching community, I presume. I'm not part of that community, but the word gets out, and everybody's going, my gosh, what's happening? And they're about to take these ranchers, this 70-year-old about guy and his grandson, who's kind of a flaky kid, and put him in jail as terrorists. Well, ranchers come from all over, and primarily or dominantly the Bundys from Nevada, because they've already been through this. And they come in, And I'm getting this all secondhand. I haven't talked to any of these people directly. As a matter of fact, they're all in federal custody now, incommunicado, other than two women. We can talk about that. But before that even started, we have the Hammonds. So the Hammonds are going to go to prison for a long time. And a bunch of ranchers come in, including several of the Bundy kids who went through this a couple years ago. Why did they come to Oregon? Well, they came to Oregon to advise the Hammonds what to do. They said, we've been through this. The solution is the local sheriff is the law enforcement. So if he tells them, you know, basically he rules, and if you have the sheriff on your side, the feds have no purview. So they're just coming in to, you know, kind of tell the Hammonds of their experiences. Well, all right, fine. But by the time they arrive, the Hammonds are in prison. And they're on their way to prison, but they're afraid to talk. So they are somehow intimidated. No, we don't even want to talk to these people. And so they quietly go to prison, which leaves a dozen or so ranchers and a couple of reporters and a couple of other people in this little town in the middle of the winter. And the weather, by the way, in December and January was the worst I've seen it in like 20, 25 years that we've lived there. So what do they do? Well, they're looking for a place to stay. So they go out and camp at this refuge. Now, catch me aside. Somebody told me you had been out there. Had you been out there, Matt?
Well, I was out there, actually. And I think you hit on a couple key points, if I can kind of drill down here on this. The first is that the land where this refuge was private land until the federal government came in and either seized or forced people off that land or made it economically unviable through bureaucrat policies, administrative policies and regulations and rules so that they had to sell. So then the Hammonds, who are trying to manage their land, get charged under a terrorism law for lighting a backfire. And you didn't mention this part, but this is what's so surprising to me when I went down there fact-finding. Lit a backfire that the BLM had already set the precedent for by lighting backfires in that area previously, one of which got out of control and destroyed a bunch of cattle and several hundred acres in and of itself. Actually, I think it might have been over 1,000. So they were doing something that the BLM had already done, and then yet they get charged with a terrorism law. And that's what I find frightening about all this. Number one, that the bureaucrats are going and seizing people's land and then calling that public land after it was private, which is almost – and it's not almost, it's Soviet language to say that. And then when somebody does stand up to them and does the right thing, they get charged under terrorism law. That's frightening to me. That's why I kind of wanted to kind of drill back down and focus on that. And it seems like it's not just in this area of property rights, but it's in a lot of different areas. But predominantly, it's coming out in the property rights fight.
It's definitely coming out where there's high-value properties, as in high-value, low-price properties. And we can talk about that. That's the connection to Hillary Clinton and everything in Oregon and the connection to Harry Reid in Nevada and foreign companies. But let me expand on – I agree with everything you said, Matt. Nothing you said contradicts anything that I knew. But there is one refinement. And you're absolutely right. That was setting backfires back then was not only the common practice, it was the BLM best practice. It's what the government itself was doing. But there's one more piece of information. Over these many years, and this just kind of came in peripherally, and there was so much going on that nobody picked up on it. But all these years, the Hammonds believed that they were setting a backfire to put out, you know, to contain a lightning-caused forest fire. All right. Well, okay, so we have the camping at the refuge, and it was not an occupation. We can talk about that later from a number of sources, including some law enforcement people. It wasn't. They were camping there. They never occupied anything. All these ranchers were there. Dozen or so ranchers. The the wildlife refuge was wide open. Citizens came and left, children, women, pictures of them there. Law enforcement came and left. So it was never occupied. But the startling thing was they had, about a week into this, before anything bad had happened, or maybe even a few days, another group came in to support the ranchers that were already there. And this was a pretty heavily armed militia group out of Utah. And they were only there for about 48 hours. They came in and they were expecting there was going to be trouble. Well, at the time, everybody was talking. There was no trouble. So the ranchers told them, no, we don't need your help, but thank you very much. But they stayed around for a day or so to rest up, I guess, before they went back. And they interviewed somebody who signed an affidavit, allegedly, that the initial fire that started it all had not been caused by lightning. There was a witness who saw the government setting the first fire. So I don't know. I heard one report of that, and then they all went back to Idaho or where they came from, and the rest of the story unfolded. But how I got into it, I was kind of stuck. I was in Oregon, and I had a desire to have my book finished down in Arizona while I was tending my wife, who was recovering from surgery. And so I was a care provider, and we were sort of stuck there. And in the middle of the night, you know, I'd be up with ice packs or trying to do help. She's fine, by the way. It all turned out. But this note comes in, and it's from this girl. Now, who is she? And it's about this massive gunfire ambush incident and everything else. Her name was Victoria Sharp. And who was she and what was she doing there? Well, it turns out she and her family, her mother and her siblings, are singers. They sing gospel songs and patriotic songs. And they heard in the news that there was this incident going down in Oregon. So the family went out there. And the oldest child was Victoria, and she came to join her family. It was, you know, over Christmas and everything. And she just graduated from school, and she became an EMT and everything. So she's getting back with the family, and they're all singers. And this incident has rolled on for several days with a lot of tension, but no violence whatsoever. People are talking, and they have been invited to the next town over. The ranchers who were there protesting had no support from the sheriff in Burns. Hammonds were already in prison, so there wasn't much point in remaining. So they were going to leave in a few days, but they had agreed to go to a meeting in the next town over, John Day. And when I say next town over, it's not close. It's like 120-plus miles on not a very good road. But they were all going, and the local sheriff in John Day was very supportive of them. He wanted to talk with them. They had a town meeting with a lot of people waiting for them, and there was a big event planned. Okay. So Victoria's family is going to go to this event, and it's going to be recorded, and they're going to sing their songs there and everything else. Well, the problem is she missed her ride. She was still getting ready. Her family went over to John Day, and she says, can I catch a ride with you guys? So she's in the Finnegan truck. Okay, when they're trying to get ready to go, and they're late for the meeting. Well, there's another woman whose name is Shauna Cox, and she's I don't know, in her 50s or so. And Shauna isn't supposed to go either to the meeting. She was just doing stuff around the refuge. I don't know what she was doing, but kind of administrative things and tending stuff. They needed somebody to run their video camera. They had a video camera, and they were going to record all these songs, and they were going to record the meeting. They couldn't find the guy to run the camera. So Shauna says, oh, I'll go with you, and because I'll run the camera. We can't find the other guy. We got to leave. We're late and everything. So off they go to the meeting. Okay. Well, as they roll along, and by the way, there are no warrants out on any of these people. They've not been charged with anything. They're just going to another meeting. Well, they start to the meeting. They get in a desolate area where they're about to go into a dead zone for cell phones. And cars appear, a lot of them, start chasing them and want them to stop. And Finnegan, the driver, says, there's already gunfire. They're already shooting at the car, at the truck, the Finnegan truck. According to testimony from both women who were there and invalidated by, they were recording on their cell phones. They couldn't talk on the phones. But so there's some gunfire. Finnegan rolls the window down, says, I am going to this meeting. You know, if you don't want me to go to the meeting, just shoot me. He drives off. Well, what he doesn't know is they've set up a kill zone around a blind curve, and he goes around the blind curve and with people in pursuit and manages to avoid hurting anybody by going into a snowbank. By now, there's a lot of gunfire hitting the truck. Okay, and he jumps out of the truck with his hands in the air. He's waist deep in snow, and he's trying to. The women who survived both say that he was trying to draw fire away from the truck because they were all scared to death. They're down on the floor, and you can listen to their testimony on my blog. Both of them have testified. All right, so that's what we know, and. So they never made it to the meeting. Finnegan was shot. The key numbers as of today, as far as I know, if you want to summarize the Burns event, and there were some people who knew more about this, but they were down here in Arizona that knew these people personally. But they heard me talking. Would you cover these meetings for us? Because we can. So I've been going around giving talks down here while I'm doing my book signings. The key numbers for Burns are 45. Everybody write down 45, 9, 5, and 2. 45 is the number of political prisoners, so far as I know, that are currently being held without bail. And I don't know what they've been charged with. That's just starting to unfold. It was a week ago, it was 42, and then it got to be 43. Now I think it's 45. So 45 is a key number. And these people have been arrested from all over the country. Most of them are ranchers, but not all of them. One of them is Trump's campaign manager from New Hampshire. One of them is a reporter who made a documentary about this. So 45. 9 is the second number. That's the number of times Finnegan was shot. Now, the federal report that was shown, there was an FBI video that everybody's watched, and it's up on my blog. They noted three shots hit him. The family had an autopsy done. They said 9. So that's a disputed number. But 45, 9. The next number is 5. What is 5? 5 is the number of FBI agents who were there who are under criminal charges. Why are they under criminal charges? They were whisked out of state. Initially, the story was, and sworn to as they're taking testimony, that the FBI was only there to observe, that they fired no shots whatsoever. They were only there as observers. And initially, I thought that this incident was going to resolve peacefully because I think, personally, my personal opinion is Comey, the FBI director, is a reasonable person. Unfortunately, the agent in charge in Oregon is not. He's a kind of a problem case. But they swore that they hadn't fired any shots. Well, it turned out they did, because they found some of their bullets in the truck, and other people had seen them going around picking up brass. And this is the elite FBI hostage rescue team. So they're in trouble for lying and to cover it up, and also for contaminating a crime scene by tampering with evidence. They were immediately whisked out of state, disappeared. All right, so that's 5. That leaves 2. The 2 number is the two women who were free, are free so far as of today. One of them was this Victoria Sharp, the young girl. She gave one interview, was absolutely traumatized. She's just barely 18, and she's a singer. All of a sudden, she's in this truck that's being riddled with gunfire. She was hiding out for a while. I think she surfaced, but as far as I know, she's only given the one interview. The other one, the Shauna Cox, is an older, fairly cool-headed woman who speaks very knowledgeably about this, and she taped it on her camera while the truck was getting hit with gunfire. She's peeking her head up over the window. She said while she was watching, five bullets hit the window pane at an angle, didn't break it. But she's trying to record it. She came out. They did not hold her. They released her. But when she started talking, they brought her back, charged her with something, and had her with an ankle bracelet. And finally, they put her under a gag order where she was directed under penalty of all kinds of bad things to not say anything publicly about what happened or about any future demonstrations planned. The gag order was just removed because her attorney with a law firm named the Arnold Law Firm in Eugene filed a case before the Ninth Circuit Court. So she files a case saying this is their, you're talking about First Amendment rights here. How can they gag order her? And she filed the case, and before the court probably even saw it, the gag order was removed. So Shauna Cox can talk now as of a day or so ago. So that's the kind of thing that's been happening, and that's sort of a stream of consciousness overview from 20,000 feet of the saga of Burns, which I think is going to go on and on.
It's endemic. It's endemic of what's happening around the rest of the country. I mean, this isn't just happening to one family in Burns. I mean, it's happening every day with bureaucracies around the country. And I think that's why all other issues are being subsumed by this government overreach, as we started talking about at the beginning, because this touches people's lives, touches, you know, people they know, family, friends. And it doesn't seem like the federal government wants to do anything responsible, nor does it seem like, at least in the majority of cases, the federal judges want to keep the federal government in check either.
I agree. The one other thing that happened, there is some good news here. You have to look pretty hard to find it. But I've been very curious about what in the world are these people being charged with to lock them up in solitary confinement, incommunicado. And a couple of things happened that I think provide some clues. Loretta Lynch came to Portland on a Sunday and gave a speech. The speech is up on my blog. Just look at the blog post on Burns under blog.johntrudell.com. And she gives this speech that she is directing her people to look all over the country and to use every avenue of the federal government to prosecute these people and so forth and so on, and to find ways to do that. All right. Well, that's kind of a strange comment. It was the next day, Monday, that they had a court session that showed the FBI video taken, very low-quality video taken from a helicopter that declared the Finnegan event to be a righteous shooting, one side says he's reaching for a gun, another side said he was reaching for a wound because he was already being shot at. And, in fact, they had been taking fire long before anybody got out of the truck. Okay. But anyway, so that video was used to justify a finding that it was a righteous shoot by whatever police officer. And as you know, police are kind of tense these days. Now, here's the good news that almost nobody knows, but it's true. The shooting was, in my opinion, And as far as everybody says, the FBI denied it. Well, we find out that they did fire shots, but their shots didn't hit anybody. They hit the truck. But as far as we know, the shooting and killing of Finnegan was entirely done by the Oregon State Police. It turned, and in fact, what had happened, all this was peaceful until Governor Kate. Kate Brown is our unelected, openly bisexual governor, so she's unique in a couple of dimensions. And apparently she can't be recalled because she was never elected in the first place. She was appointed.
And isn't that a nice setup?
Amazing, yeah. But anyway, here's Governor. So she gave a directive and an interview. The words of it I don't have on my blog, but it's public, so you can see the exact. But essentially, it was who will deal with this troublesome rancher. She directed the state police to use whatever force was necessary to end this incident right now and everything else. And all of a sudden, what had been a very calm discussion and was just about over with resulted in the shooting. Well, it turns out, in a strange way, that is very good news as far as getting evidence, because the Oregon State Police, by Oregon law and by their own procedures, have to extensively document any lethal force incidents. That's a very clear thing. And they have, and that evidence belongs to the public. That's the Oregon law, and that is not just the statute law, but it's also the Oregon State procedures. So me, naive John here, thinks, well, all right, that's going to come out. Well, it didn't come out. What happened instead is there was an absolutely frantic effort to get a bill through the Oregon legislature to delay release of that evidence. And of course, there's a majority in both houses by the Democrats there. So Kate kind of rules. She's our queen. All right. Well, they failed. It was a short session. It was only supposed to be in session for like 45 days, only to deal with some administrative issues and not anything new and everything else. Well, they rushed it through, and they got the bill to pass in the House. But it died in the Oregon Senate. And the legislature is not going to reconvene until 2017, okay? So unless they call an emergency session or something, which seems unlikely. So we have this much time. By law now, they have to release all that, and they haven't. All right, so that's kind of interesting. The other thing that connects the dots, it's kind of interesting. I told you about the Lynch speech, and this is just fit together in the last couple of days with the Shauna Cox incident. What are they charging these people with? Well, it turns out there's an interview, a congressional hearing interview, where Trey Gowdy is interviewing Loretta Lynch in front of Congress, and he's questioning her about law enforcement, and she is talking about using intent, okay? And they have a long, a couple-minute discussion about this. That link is up on my blog, blog.johntrudell.com, the Burns incident. And all of a sudden, this light comes on in my head, and what they're charging these ranchers with and what they're charging these reporters with, and what they're charging these women with cameras with, is not anything that they have done, but what intentions and thoughts they may have had in their minds.
It's what they believe. It's a thought crime.
Yeah, it's a thought crime, okay? Now,
and John, we've got literally 2 minutes left. I want to make sure, because I want you to plug your book, but I totally agree. I think it's a great place to end. What we're talking about is people being charged with what essentially is a thought crime. So you have a brand new book that's out right now. In the last minute and a half, if you could, for the listeners, tell where they can go to find out more about you and also a little bit about your book.
Yes. Okay. To find out more about my novels, I have 5 novels out now. And the most recent one has only been out for a few weeks. It's called Raven's Redemption. All of my books have won national awards, except that the most recent one, of course, hasn't had time to win an award. It's just out. But they're all there. My web page, my author's page for the books is johntrudel.com. One L, johntrudel. All the books are there. Reviews are there of the books. And I even put the first chapters up for free. Probably the most significant thing is, as Matt said in the lead-in, it's really spooky because I make up these scary stories about terrorists with Iranian nuclear weapons and things like that. And by the time the book comes out, it's happening. But that'll get you all the information on the books. The books are up on Amazon, both as paper books and as Kindle e-books. And, in fact, the Look Inside feature is there. So you can look for my name, John D. Trudel, on Amazon. That's my Amazon author's page. And enjoy the books, and I hope I can come back and talk some about the novels. But we got a lot on record about Burns, and that
absolutely
makes me feel better.
Well, John, we will have you back on again. Once again, thank you for being on Patriot Radio with me. I really love your perspective and the way that you can wrap everything together, tell a story, connect the dots. I love that about you. So thank you very much. God bless you. And we will have you back on again. John Trudel, folks, author of Raven's Run, Raven's Redemption. And I posted a link to his site up on the Patriot Radio Facebook page if you want to learn more about him. Well, as I started at the very beginning, remember to do everything you can to defend freedom locally, and may God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.